Well, good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. How is everybody on this Monday, the 18th of September? Delighted to have you with us. Hopefully you had a lovely weekend. It was, for the most part, a beautiful, beautiful weekend. Warm, just summer-ish, and quite lovely. So hopefully you had a great time, and we are very happy to have you with us and have you in our company this morning. Let me introduce our panel to you, and then we've got a couple of housekeeping things, but let me introduce our panel to you because it's a great panel, and I want to share the bounty with you. Political consultant Libby Post joins us each and every Monday. Check your calendar. Today is a Monday. Libby is here. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, dear.
Very, very good to see you. Communications consultant Teresa Bourgeois is with us. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Doing very well. Thank
Wonderful
you.
To see you. And all the way from Amman, Jordan, on a really, really good landline, our good friend, investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo is with us. Good morning, Rosemary.
Hello, hello. How are you?
Well, it's wonderful to talk to you and wonderful to have you back on. So thank you very much.
Yep, I agree.
You were on last week, and all the letters I got is, oh, could Rosemary do that every day? And I said, well, I think she has a job.
Yeah, every day would be hard, but it is fun every once in a while, I must say.
Yeah.
Especially with Teresa and Libby. Yay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're
well,
in
have
it.
You.
You're good. When I asked you, Rosemary, I was like, oh, this is going to be great because I have Libby, I have Teresa. This is going to be fantastic. I was so excited. Real quick, and because I know you've missed this, Rosemary, and by God, I certainly want to make sure that you hear the good news, but the lockbox is open. Are you excited?
Oh my goodness!
The lockbox. We opened up the lockbox this morning, and believe it or not, in a month, October 16th, the fund drive begins for the fall. Now, let me just give you a very quick summation of what is happening here. First of all, this is vitally important for the radio station. Second of all, the January fund drive was a one-day fund drive. The June fund drive was a day and a morning. It was, I think, 9 hours, 9-hour fund drive. We don't know what this one's going to be. We don't know. But we do know that whatever you do to help the lockbox, make sure that, because the last two drives, we've gone in with more than half the money already collected because of the lockbox and because, well, quite frankly, Donald Trump has been good for business. So
be careful what you wish for.
Right. Be careful what you wish for.
That hasn't changed. He hasn't done much for press freedom in the last 7 months.
No. And look, we're still on the chopping block, so there's a lot there. And so we need you now more than ever. We do want to mention that what better thing? You can help your public radio station, and you can go see a group who will go make fun of the president. And Capital Steps of coming back,
wow.
I believe, for the fourth year in a row. They're doing a show especially for us, our dear friends of the Capitol Steps. They'll be at the Egg Friday, November 3rd, and it's at 7:30. And you'll get a CD recording of the show. You will get to see the show live, and you get a pair of tickets, all of that for $150. $150, and you get to do all of that. By the way, it's a WAMC exclusive. It's a new show with new content, so it'll be recorded so you get a copy of it. So if you've seen them recently in the past, this will be a new show.
I saw the WAMC one last year. I laughed from start to finish. It was hysterical.
It's a lot of fun.
Sadly, hysterical.
Yeah, and Alan will be there, and I know they always include him in a sketch, and that's great. So it'll be a lot of fun. It's sold out in the last 3 years, and we started this at 7:45 this morning, and I think we've already sold, like 50 pairs of tickets.
Yeah, so I bet
a lot
that's going to sell out.
Yeah, so
today.
it's going to go
today.
Fast. Well, I hope so.
Wouldn't
so
that be?
Anyway.
Wow.
We are very, very excited. So it's Capital Steps. But the overall message, of course, is that the fund drive is starting. We need your help. Whatever you can do, WAMC.org, and you will see the link there to pledge online. Also, you can go, you can call us and at 800-323-9262, and someone will take your pledge there. But easiest way to do it is online, WAMC.org. All right. So don't forget that. By the way, the name of the new album is Orange is the New Barack.
Right. I saw them this summer at Cranwell, and it was hilarious. So people are in for a good time.
such songs as I Want a Man with a Small Hand.
That's
so
right.
So there you go. Okay. Have fun with that. We'll come back to that and let you know. Great show, and we look forward to seeing you all there. And it's our event. It's all WAMC people. It's a big party for WAMC, and we have a lot of fun. So I hope you will join us and get us started as we start off the lockbox and the WAMC Fun Drive season. Okay. Now that I have spent that money on a long-distance phone call to Jordan to tell Rosemary all about our fun drive, let's get to the subject at hand.
I need to raise money to pay for Rosemary's phone call.
That's right. That's right. It all goes
to
that.
People want Rosemary.
Let us go to what has been happening in the news. It was a weekend that is full of stories, and I tried to get some from what happened over the weekend, but also what's going to happen. And I guess the big story, of course, is Donald Trump at the UN. Now, the story in the New York Times is really interesting because it's the big question as the UN gathers what to make of Donald Trump. In other words, why should the UN be any different than the rest of us trying to figure out what's going on here? And representatives from 193 nations are set to gather for the 72nd Annual General Assembly. All eyes will be on President Trump as he juggles diplomatic tensions in countries like North Korea and Iran. Rosemary, I'll let you start.
Okay, well, I'm not sure. I've read the Times report where they're trying to say, you know, he's talked to all these other leaders, but this is different. I'm not sure that I see it as so different. He's made exactly clear how he behaves in these settings when he's been at the G20 meetings and in his private forays to the Middle East and all that. I don't know what we're expecting. We're going to get more of the same. And he doesn't know himself, and anything he says, it doesn't matter because he can change it tomorrow. Like, are we in or out of Paris? Are we part of that yet? I don't know. Are we going to bomb North Korea, or are we going to talk to them? And who's in charge, Tillerson, or is it Haley? All of this remains up in the air. I just don't see this as a climactic event that the New York Times and others have made it into.
But it is important, right? And one analyst put it in this Times article, the days are kind of like speed dating from hell. In other words, not exactly President Trump's favored format, because it becomes what they refer to as the world's most tedious cocktail party. I'm interested in what you said, Rosemary, as far as what we have seen in the other summits, because we have seen him be rather strong in his scripted words, and then we hear about perhaps private meetings or things that were off to the side, and then about 5 days later somebody will tell a story about a meeting that he had, I don't know, in a burger shack somewhere.
Yeah, and this is even this is a little more fraught, because he does not believe in the UN. He has said bad things about the UN for years as a candidate, and even before then, he has not paid the dues as much as he excoriates everyone in NATO for not paying their dues, and they don't even have dues. We actually haven't paid what we're supposed to the UN. So he has a lot of clout over the organization, and yet very little respect for it. What he does want to do is be impressive. He wants to come off as a statesman. So it seems to me it's the perfect setup to do what he's very good at, which you just described, a great public face, but in reality he's not going to do anything that makes a big difference.
Yeah, I think what you said about his attacks on the UN are critical, Rosemary. I know that you know, his first salvo out of the box is a meeting this morning on how to quote-unquote reform the UN, and he demonized it throughout the campaign. And once in office, they proposed very deep cuts in UN funding, over $1 billion in U.S. cuts, wants to zero fund a lot of the UNICEF and Food for Peace programs, meaning zero fund U.S. contributions, and wants to cut by over $1 billion a U.S. contribution to U.N. peacekeeping. Of course, the House and Senate Republicans and Democrats said that's a non-starter for them, but certainly the people around the world, leaders around the world, heard that, see his budget proposals, see what he's advocating.
And to add to that, because he just cut our own delegation to the UN enormously this past week. That doesn't seem to me to be saying, "Hey, UN, I'm so happy to be here." But
well, that's certainly penny wise and pound foolish. You know, these Tillerson say they wanted to cut the costs, but it's a lot less expensive for the State Department folks to go up to New York and meet with people coming in from all over the world than it is to travel all over the world. Of course, the other problem is that they have so stabilized the State Department and driven people out that there aren't as many people to go, but it is a real problem.
Yeah, it seems like it's sort of like who's on first, you know, because Tillerson's saying one thing, sort of, kind of. Nikki Haley is saying, well, maybe, you know, General Mattis will be the point person on this. So they don't really know what they're doing. And what's really important about all this is that Putin and the president of China, who I don't remember his name, excuse me, but they're not coming. They're not coming. And if we're going to deal with North Korea, those are the people that need to be at the table.
Right, and Theresa May is coming, and you know, he's meeting with her, and he's got some apologizing to do. He'll be meeting with her on Wednesday over this terrorist activity and his response to that, which was really unsettling to them. And also, I thought
he doesn't apologize, Theresa.
I know. Also, it's interesting that new prime minister of Pakistan is coming, but Trump's not going to meet with him. They're going to have Pence meet with him. Now, if there's one person that we really need to be connected to more closely, it's the leader of Pakistan because of the Afghanistan issue.
I do want to ask, I'm curious, Rosemary, you were talking about, is it Tillerson? Is it Nikki Haley? There is an article in the Times today about Nikki Haley, and when Nikki Haley talks, does President Trump listen? And because she casts herself as someone who can sway the president on important policy issues, I'm not sure anyone actually has that power, but what do you make of her and her role and what she has accomplished so far?
I've made myself clear on her. She's very
I know.
Ambitious. She wants to run for president. Someday.
I didn't
she
mean to make you sputter.
Yeah, I don't think she can control Trump. I mean, I'm not even sure that John Kelly can, although he's trying mightily.
Tillerson is
trying to stay in for a respectable amount of time. What I've heard is a year, and then he's going to get the hell out of there.
Who, Kelly?
Tillerson.
Oh, Tillerson, right. Yeah. And
that would be an opening for her then, which is exactly what she wants. She wants to move up, I think, the chain to become a viable presidential candidate.
Do you think Trump would let her go to state, would have her go to state?
She's been licking his behind for a really long time now. Yes.
That's a lovely image.
That was
Thank
how
you
really
very
feel.
Much. Yeah.
See, I thought that she's gotten out ahead of him a couple too many times for his liking.
Well, Tillerson has done that too.
Yeah.
Right. Sort of been
and which is why he's not long for the office.
No, I think he's not long for the office, not because of that, but because they won't let him do his job, and he's been emasculated, and he's not the kind of guy that'll stand for that.
Well, but, McMaster.
Right.
Sorry.
Well, no, I was just going to ask you, Theresa, but because if this becomes a Trump three-ring circus in the sense of because everybody's watching him, sort of nobody knows really what to make, and this is including the world leaders, by the way. This is just the people in the media. This is people around the world going to these meetings and not knowing what to expect or quite frankly, perhaps expecting the worst. But meanwhile, there's real business that has to be accomplished.
Right. That's the thing exactly that I was just thinking about. There's across the globe, there's really important business. There's the Qatar situation in the Middle East. There is the Syria situation. And in the last 2 months, the U.S. has stepped up bombing dramatically. Many, many civilians have been killed. There's U.N. reports on that. So there's a lot of concern about civilian deaths in Syria. And what's to happen to Syria. There's obviously the North Korea situation, which is on the minds of everyone. And it's interesting, the president is going to meet with head of South Korea and Japan, but not until the last day. One would have thought he'd be meeting with them before his big speech tomorrow, but he meets with them as the last meeting. And then also, there's a climate issue. I mean, we've had two hurricanes here with a third on the way, and climate change does not cause hurricanes, but it certainly exacerbates them because of the warm waters, more water. But also India, Mumbai has had terrible flooding. Africa, Nigeria, Sierra Leone, thousands of people have been killed in weather-related problems. And so climate is a very, very big issue, whether he wants to talk about it or not. If you just walk around the globe, the Antarctic is melting. There's major issues that need to be dealt with. And the question is, will they be able to take this seriously?
You know, are we making the mistake of journalists, which is to assume that this has to happen at the UN at this particular time? This is just an event. I mean, it's like a showcase, and they're not going to do any real business here. This is a show.
Well, it's traditionally had a forcing function because everyone's there. And it used to be paired with the Clinton Global Initiative annual meeting, too. And so this was a week where a lot of, not a lot, but usually the one or two big initiatives that got done. And there's, you know, you can't put a price on
it. And the leader of the free world shuns now both traditions and Clinton's.
Well,
so
I think
I repeat my concern. I don't think this is much of an event.
Well, I would say the leader of the free world is Angela Merkel, and she has a
that's a good point.
Yes, yeah, I mean, she has a election next week, and right. Which is, you know, it looks like she'll win, but it's not certain. So, but I would say that she is. And then the two other pivotal figures in the world are not coming. That's
right.
That's interesting that they're not coming, as Libby, you were talking about.
And if he's going to get up there and berate them all, which is totally within the realm of possibility with this man, you know, then he will further erode the U.S. standing on the world stage.
We have to take a break. I'm going to hold everybody there. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We welcome your letters as well. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. Rosemary Armeo, Libby Post, Teresa Bourgeois. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and our panel discussion on this Monday, the 18th of September. Very nice to have you with us. Rosemary Armeo, Teresa Bourgeois, and Libby Post making up the panel this morning. Alan is away, but we'll be back, I believe, on Wednesday morning, and we're excited for that. We actually had an Alan sighting earlier today, so that's good. So
so he's back from the other coast.
Yes. So we're be ready for that on Wednesday morning. Now, as far as the mail goes, I have a couple of letters. We'll get to those, and then we'll move on to other stuff. Jonathan writes, I just read an interview about the book The Dangerous Case of Donald Trump, about his psychological flaws. Chilling. It comes out in October. Well, certainly much has been meant about the president. Much has been said about the president's mental state. And now come the books. Mike says, I cannot help but laughing at Donald Trump's insisting that UN member nations pay their rightful share of UN dues. This is a man who frequently used Chapter 11 to get out of paying contractors and construction people what he owed for working on his buildings.
And today, his key message is that they have to be more transparent. And certainly he is the king of transparency.
I want the guest list from Mar-a-Lago in that case, please.
Well, it's his ability to just project what he does wrong on everybody else so people pay attention to that instead of him. And they really.
And Rosemary, you know, like you said, this is not important and it may not become important, but I think it is an opportunity to get a lot of done. So perhaps the opportunity lost.
Hey, Rosemary, how do you get those records from Mar-a-Lago? You spent a lot of time in Florida. Is there a way of doing, can they get that information anyway?
Or they have a court order. The court came out in favor of the group, and it's
good government group,
right?
Yeah.
And they press for them on the grounds that these are, you know, these ought to be public record in the same way the visitor log at the White House should be, and those are open. And the court said, yes, you are right. So the Trump people said, well, give us until July, and then we'll get them to you. And then they dribbled them out the last week, and there were only, it was less than 25 names on it. They said, we don't think any of the other ones we should have to give you. Disagreeing not just with the group that wants them, of course, but with the court. So it will have to be adjudicated. The records that did come out, the few that did come out, have contained some information about billing at Mar-a-Lago, which plays into the whole emoluments clause. he is collecting money because he owns Mar-a-Lago for people who are getting paid by the government to come to Mar-a-Lago to meet with him. It's just a, you know, just a conflict of interest of the sort the president of the United States isn't supposed to have. But I say all this with glee because he's been caught at something else, but I am well aware that these are mostly political charges, not legal charges, and there is no political will yet that I can see to hold him accountable.
Chris writes to us and says, with all if the recent cuts to government budgets and staffing, why aren't we at the same time mentioning the increased expense of protecting the Trump family as well as the amount of government money going to the Trump businesses? Could it be a wash, according to Chris?
That's a letter. That's a good letter.
Well, Rosemary, as you say, I mean, even a one-night rack room raid, it was over $500.
Right.
And that's just that's one person, one night. And that, you know, golf cart, the whole thing. And he's
Seen it yet, but David Fahrenthold has. I'm sorry if I'm not. If I cut out somebody, please, I'm not doing it on purpose. But David Fahrenthold has an article, maybe one of you saw it today, where he's looking at business patterns, the Trump empire business patterns, and looking for losses because people, you know, find it, they're canceling because they don't want to be politically connected with Trump. But on the other hand, he's also getting lots of new business because people want to, like, kiss up to the president. So he did an analysis of this, and I think that's really fascinating, but I haven't had time to look at it today.
Certainly the hotel, the post office hotel in Washington is a prime example of that, and the emoluments clause violations there.
They exceeded their profit expectations.
Dramatically.
Yeah.
And what do you think about him being at Bedminster, his New Jersey golf course, this week? It just seems to me being there in advance of this UN event where he should be preparing. It's the whole privacy issue, you know, security cost. It's just astounding to me.
I don't know. I don't think he cares about any of this stuff. And he will tell you that American people don't care about it either.
Right. You were talking about the will. Right.
But there was all this issue about Hillary Clinton's emails and, you know, was the potential breach of security, yet he's there preparing for about the various breaches of security there? That's what worries me.
It goes beyond, I mean, he thinks he's above everything. And so, again, as I said before, projecting out.
May I point out that he proved that he is above it all. People forgot everything and voted him in.
That's right.
We have to live with that.
But I think these next few days in terms of global foreign, you know, global policy are very important and potentially precarious, given what determining whether or not he stays on script or goes off script.
So,
okay, well, Teresa, I'm sorry. This lets me slip in something that I was hoping we would get to today. It's not on our list. But Paul Krugman, in his column today, excellent column, talks about a new health care bill, which is simmering in the Senate, and it's not getting a lot of attention because we're all talking about the UN and North Korea.
Right.
And it has a chance of passing. And it is even more horrible and more cruel than the two Republican measures that failed earlier this year.
People
have to be on the alert.
You read our minds because we were talking about that during the break, that was something we had to bring up because it is a really fascinating story. We'll talk about it in just a second. Teresa has the lowdown. Okay, so one more letter from Catherine. Any thoughts? Hi, panel, says Kathy.
Hi.
Any thoughts on how the convictions for voter fraud in Bloomberg play in light of the crazy voter fraud panel? While they search for examples, sentencing for the first perpetrator took place on Friday. The offense and conviction in our own backyard seems to get little to no press, perhaps because Trump and Kushner used the same tactics in their own business dealings, or because Skelos and Silver have their hands dirty in the mess? Question mark? Thoughts? Question mark?
I don't know.
Is anyone aware of this?
Maybe, are you aware of this one?
No.
All right. I'm going to hand this letter to you, and that's homework for you. Okay. Let's.
I didn't even understand that.
Yeah, I did not.
I didn't understand it.
Okay.
Libby, you're all over it.
Excellent. We're going to check. By the way, you know, every once in a while you think, we only have about 2 minutes before we have to go to break, so I'm going to just throw this in. Every once in a while you think you're immune to a lot of the stuff that comes out, and then we see the GIF that he sent out yesterday that he tweeted of him hitting Hillary Clinton with a golf ball in the back of the head. And you think, my God, you know, just I mean, that's sort of a wake-up call again, isn't it?
I mean, child.
He is just unbelievable.
Yes.
And yet, I know what everyone's going to say, that it plays to the bass and that it works, and but good Lord,
it demeans the office.
Uh-huh.
It is. It's bullying. It's dangerous. I mean, if a different person did this, it's essentially threatening harm to a person who's a protected Hillary Clinton. So I don't know. Do people know what we're talking about? Right?
Well, yeah. He tweeted out a GIF that shows him hitting Hillary Clinton in the back of the head with a golf, or I guess
right.
in the back
Retweeted,
with a golf
right.
ball,
and she falls down.
And she falls down as she was going on the plane.
But it was an edited GIF. It wasn't like it really happened.
No.
Okay.
Now,
somebody put this together. He retweeted it.
But meanwhile, you have several women coming out and rebuking and saying that this should...
It's outrageous.
That it's outrageous.
Violence against women.
And they're looking for an apology. But then, Rosemary, get ready, sit down. I'm sorry. But, you know, where are the men? Where are the rest of the Congress? Where's the rest of the Senate and saying, no, this isn't acceptable?
Right. And think
of... Rich, we're here. I could just hear Rich saying, oh, pick your battles. This isn't that important. It's just a little lighthearted.
I mean, I understand...
Where's Melania Trump, who said that her... I'm sorry, Joe.
No.
Melania Trump said that her focus was going to be on cyberbullying. Mm-hmm. If this is not a case of cyberbullying, what is? And think about this.
Well, he took it down, so maybe Melania did get some.
Well, I think it's because she's getting really good press, and he's not. So he has to lash out. But there was a column in one of the Chicago papers that I read that all women, should, in the Chicago Tribune, all women in Congress should rebuke Trump and say they're not going to be working with him at all on anything, Republicans and Democrats, until he stops doing this and until he takes it back.
What
he's doing is disgusting.
He did not take it down. I just checked. It's still there. It's still there. It's not presidential. It's cyberbullying. It's disrespectful. It demeans the office. It's just stunning. And think about this. The day before, a whole week of world leaders coming in, people coming from all over the world, where you should, you know, dignified, important, their life and death issues across the board. And what does he do? He tweets this and a whole set of other just preposterous tweets.
Yes, but it's for a reason.
There is the Rocket Boy tweet as well.
But it is for a reason. And the reason is he wants to undermine Clinton, whatever credibility Clinton had as Secretary of State dealing with all these people in the UN, because she went there. This is a way, in his twisted mind, that he undermines her.
Well, and because her book is out.
Yeah.
So well.
And she's out.
Right. I was in Lebanon this week at a wine tasting, and we were all sitting around. We were the only Americans, and of course, the discussion turned to Trump, and one Lebanese woman said, oh, I think he's hilarious. He's just so interesting to watch. And that's just what he's doing. It isn't just to his base at this place. It's to a whole amusement hungry world.
It's his 24/7.
I think this is horrible and deplorable, but I'm not going to go crazy talking about it. I'm going to just talk about his stuff on North Korea and on healthcare, which is far more important.
Well, part of his series of tweets, though, was calling the leader of North Korea Rocket Man. And again, it just
I don't want
demeans-
that song co-opted.
That's right.
I don't.
And I hope Elton John gets upset.
Did you see Pete Sousa? Pete Sousa is just the ultimate Trump troll. He was Barack Obama's photographer.
Yeah.
And there's a Pete Sousa photo for everything. And so after the Rocket Man tweet came out, then he tweeted a picture of President Obama with Elton John and just said the real Rocket Man and the only true Rocket Man. But we laugh, and I'm sure some people listening are just rolling their eyes saying, oh, they're harping on him for every little thing. It demeans the office of the president. It's not presidential, and this Rocket Man going after the Kim Jong-un like this is just not strategic. It is not all the foreign
policy. That's the more important.
It is not
the presidency was demeaned last November. Yeah. We put him in. That was the ultimate meaning. We got exactly what we voted for.
All right. I have one minute before.
Can't normalize this.
I have 1 minute for a break, but are we pro bringing Sean Spicer into the Emmy Awards
or con?
Con.
Con.
I thought it was hilarious.
Okay. I knew there would be dissension in the ranks.
I didn't say it wasn't funny.
I thought it was
funny and wrong. And why was it wrong, Rosemary?
Because he's getting money for having been a lying, horrible public servant. And it isn't funny. Melissa would have been better. Put her up there.
Did you see her face?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Do we know that she got... do we know that he got money?
Yeah.
I don't know if he got
paid.
Okay,
I didn't know that he
got paid. It's helping him get well.
Yeah.
Over lying. And again,
I mean, he really did poke fun.
But it becomes a normalization.
It normalizes it. It makes it funny. It makes lying to the American people. These offices, particularly one as public as that, there's a decorum. If you're going to sign up, you got to sign up for understanding that the job is bigger than you and you have a responsibility to have some respect for the job.
But that's pie in the sky at this point.
I know, but you just don't. I know it. It's he's helping himself get well, and I'm sure, you know, it was funny but wrong.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. Teresa Bourgeois, Rosemary Armeo, and Libby Post make up the panel this morning. We welcome your thoughts. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. Let's go to North Korea and talk about the situation there. The U.S. warns the time is running out for a peaceful solution with North Korea. Here is the latest. Rex Tillerson was on Face the Nation over the weekend. The Trump administration escalated its rhetoric against North Korea on Sunday, warning that time is running out for a peaceful solution between Kim Jong-un's regime and the United States and its allies. Administration officials said the risk from North Korea's nuclear weapons program is rising, and they underscored that President Trump will confront the looming crisis at the UN General Assembly this week. Trump, who spoke by phone with the South Korean president, referring to Kim on Twitter as Rocket Man, we mentioned this earlier, and asserted that long gas lines are forming in the north because of recent UN sanctions and oil imports. However, Trump aides emphasized that the administration is examining all diplomatic measures to rein in the issue. They made clear that military options remain on the table. If North Korea, this from Nikki Haley on State of the Union, if North Korea keeps on with its reckless behavior, if the United States has to defend itself or defend its allies in any way, North Korea will be destroyed.
To say that time is running out, I mean, time isn't running out. We can do whatever we want and talk as much as we want here, because time does not have to run out on this situation. This is where diplomacy comes in. This is where talking with other heads of state, people who can influence Putin and the Chinese president, this is where things can change. But they really want war. They really want a war because, you know, part of it is because our economy is a war economy, and our economy thrives when we're in a war. It didn't do so well in 2008 because they kept cutting taxes and revenue. But the fact is we're not running out of time, but they want us to think we are, so that we're backed into a corner.
I think there's a lot of diplomacy to be done, despite mm-hmm. what he's saying. Why, for example, are Russia and China sending jet fuel into North Korea? That's allowing them to test and develop these missiles. That would be something to figure out. Trump, as usual, is wrong about gas shortages. First of all, even if that were going to happen, it wouldn't happen in the first week after the sanctions were put into place. But they probably won't happen at all. It's at least to hurt the military in North Korea, which will have priorities in place to take precedence over anything else. So I'm not sure that the sanctions are incredibly effective, but what would be is if the sanctions were enforced by everyone and we had a united front against North Korea, if it wasn't just a fight between the U.S. and North Korea. That all requires diplomacy.
Teresa?
Yes, it requires very delicate diplomacy and understanding the nuances of the region, and that's the problem with Donald Trump. And also, right. That's why it's challenging when you have such a cacophony of voices. You have Tillerson saying one thing and McMaster saying something a little bit different and Mattis saying something a little bit different, and everybody is talking but not with one coherent voice. Mm-hmm. So it's hard for our allies. And it's just a very, very, very precarious situation. And what strikes me is Kim Jong-un is saying that they have to do this to protect themselves, particularly against the threats from the United States. So if, as they did, you know, Friday, McMaster was at the White House press briefing and drawing some pretty hard, forceful red lines. And so all that does is embolden Kim Jong-un, giving him, saying, see, this is why we have to mm-hmm. do this. This is why we have to do this. They're handing him the rhetoric that allows him to say and do what he does. I mean, that's my fear. And we just don't have enough key diplomats in critical roles to do the diplomacy that this requires.
Yep. What she said.
We have some letters. Let me go to those. We have a few moments before our break. Richard says, panel, the only Trump administration cabinet members to survive Trump's first term will be Ivanka and Jared.
They're not cabinet members, but point taken.
And Ivanka said in an interview that was published over the weekend that, you know, she shouldn't be expected to have to influence her father.
Really?
Yeah.
That's exactly what she said she was going to do.
It's a senior policy advisor right. position. If she can't influence him, then
why would you expect her to
I
do
think
that?
Jared's going to end up in jail, but that's another story.
Patrick writes, do you know when the United States' deadliest hurricanes were? It was the turn of the century, which was far too soon for even the Industrial Revolution and its carbon emissions to have influenced the climate. The death tolls were far higher, which is striking, given the fact that populations were smaller and less dense.
Well, the reason the death tolls were a lot higher is because you didn't have the NOAA to warn
right.
people. You didn't have all of these
people
systems in place to provide the information
right.
and give people. And also, this time you saw far fewer houses were destroyed in Florida during Irma than in Andrew because you have new rules and regulations about building codes.
Yep.
Danny says, when we talk about the lunacy of our current leader, my mind always goes to, how did we get here? Who were the people who voted for him, who thought he would do a good job? And how do we address those individuals living in our country that would make choices to put such a man in power? I feel like Trump is a small part of the issue, and the people who elected him are why. Try it again. And the people who elected him and why are the bigger issue. Rosemary?
Oh, I don't talk to them. I just don't at all anymore. I try it on Facebook, but it's oh my gosh. I'm in wars now with people who want scientific studies. These are WAMC listeners who want scientific studies proving there's climate change, and with people who want me to explain to them why I think Hillary still would have been the better candidate, and they want me to explain why I don't point to the good things that Trump has done while in office. We're deliberately ignoring great news, apparently, about the economy. And some other stuff I don't know. I can't talk to them, and I agree that that's the bigger problem. It's not just that this bore got into office, but that we put him there.
Well, not all of us put him there, and 3 million people.
We did.
About 3 million more people voted not for him.
Yeah, but he won.
He legitimately won.
I get that. Well, sort of, kind of. I'm not sure if it was legitimate or not, given everything that we're finding out with Russian collusion, what happened with Facebook and everything else.
This Facebook issue needs more light.
Yes.
But let's be clear, too. The did not vote party was the prevailing vote in this last
mm-hmm.
election.
Mm-hmm.
And so he did win. But he won not just because we need to understand for the people who voted for them what their level of economic security and anger about the political process was that drove them to put aside all, you know, for some people it was just the Supreme Court, but for most people it's just disgust with how things are working in Washington or not working, and for others, economic insecurity.
We have to take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We have a lot of letters, a lot on the, you know, we can talk about all this stuff, but...
Healthcare.
Well, okay, but people want to talk about the GIF. Okay, we'll do that. And healthcare, I promise you, Teresa.
Alert,
I promise you.
Call, get ready to call. The lockbox and then your Congress.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Good morning. Welcome back to The Roundtable. Rosemary Armeo, Libby Post, and Teresa Bourgeois making up the panel this morning, and we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. A reminder, we are also telling you about the opening of the lockbox. We're starting our lockbox campaign as we get ready to start the fund drive on October 16th, but we would like to be halfway in the drive prior to that, and you can help us get there. We have a pair of tickets to the Capitol Steps at the Egg for a $150 pledge. You can go see the Capitol Steps on Friday, the 3rd of November. Also get a CD recording of that, so you get to go see the show, and then you have it forever. In a copy of it, which is very, very cool. And it'll be a great WAMC party.
Mm-hmm.
It's November 3rd. It's a Friday night, and it's at 7:30. A pair of tickets, $150. It's at the Egg in Albany. The Egg in Albany. And Capitol Steps, WAMC.org, 1-800-323-9262. And from what they're telling me in the front office, tickets are going very briskly. So if you would like to do this, I warn you, do it quickly. Okay.
Fill up the egg today.
That's right. Fill up the egg. We got a lot of letters about the retweet of the GIF. All right. So we got this one from Janice, who says, I think he posted this because Hillary was getting too much attention because of her book, which is really pathetic. That was your thought on it, Teresa. Dan says, wow, listening to WAMC, it's clear why Trump was elected. The Three Stooges would be in jail if they did their antics today. Sad that this program has become the mouthpiece for the nanny state. I'm so glad we don't have the last loser president to listen to. Keep them guessing, Trump. Full steam ahead, says Dan.
Ooh, can we give a collective raspberry to that, please, ladies?
I just want to ask Dan...
You couldn't get Teresa on the raspberries. I'm sorry, Rosemary. Go ahead, Teresa.
Didn't mean to interrupt Rosemary. Imagine if President Barack Obama had tweeted out something similar attacking.
Well, here is
Condoleezza Rice.
Here is Margie. Who imagine. Says, imagine for a moment President Obama spreading a similar image of John McCain. What would the outcry have mm-hmm. been? The current president is deplorable. That is Margie's.
Or Bush's, Condoleezza Rice was Bush's Secretary of State, right? Imagine.
Or Rita, John
McCain. Again, all this does is remind us how completely divided we are. There are two camps, and no, we can't imagine it happening to our side. They can't imagine. They think it's completely comparable, and it is us and them. And and we do call each other names, so, you know.
Well, we've lost civility.
Stooges, I call them the Trumpansies,
yeah,
and I'm not sure. It feels good for the moment, but I'm not sure that we're going towards a lasting solution.
No.
But we can't normalize this, though. We just, this is not presidential behavior, and
I think
it
we
should
already
not
have.
Be normalized. No, I'm pollyannishly pushing against
it. We're continually shocked by it, and I want us to stop using the tropes. They were good for the first 7 months. We need more. Like, stop, it's just a distraction, stop normalizing it, give them a chance. All of those are out the window. We need new ones going forward.
All right, we got a couple of those in the three letters I have left. Rita asks a good question. I'm going to direct this to Teresa. Can you explain specifically why demeaning the office of the presidency is so dangerous? It seemed obvious,
God.
but go ahead.
There you go.
So we are, in theory, respected all around the world. And we need to have, first of all, we need to have internal cohesion, you know, cohesion within our country. And we need to be able to look up to the president and know that he or she is in control, that they're speaking with a common voice, that they're leading us through good times and bad. And so imagine, you know, and so if you have a president who lowers the expectation of the presidency itself, then that makes it harder to do so.
All you have is your credibility. And he has demeaned the credibility of the office. And so why, given his antics, should anybody know, regardless of who it is next time around, why would world leaders, you know, not expect the same? And how much work will need to be done to reestablish the credibility of the office and of the United States after this is over?
You have to maintain some, dare I use the word, reverence or respect for the role that the person has who has that task. So I think that it weakens our government internally and the perception of our country globally when one diminishes the importance of that role, if that's too Pollyannish.
Mm-hmm. Mike writes, tell me now, didn't you laugh at the Clinton gif? It's a joke. It's not violence against women. Is it unprofessional? Absolutely. But what do you expect from Trump? Let's not blow it out of proportion.
It is violence against women. Anytime there's an image of women being hit that goes viral like that, that people laugh at, that it just demeans women. And if what's his name?
Mike.
Mike, I would suggest that you try to look at life once in a while from a woman's perspective, and the fact that we are always under attack and that sexual violence is always something that we have to deal with, and domestic violence is on the rise, you know, and it's costing us hundreds of millions in taxpayer dollars to combat domestic violence in this country. It's demeaning to women. It's not funny.
And I would also argue, I agree wholeheartedly, but I will also argue that if it was somebody hitting a golf ball and hitting a man in the back of the head who then falls down, that's violence. That's cyberbullying, mm-hmm. too. Particularly so when it's Trump, who has been verbally attacking Hillary Clinton for years, and then there's this gif. It just reinforces that through picture. And people get inured to it, you know. You shouldn't get used to it.
All right, last letter on this. And Paul says his tweet served the purpose of making the news all about him without regard to the lack of importance most of it has. Is there any real news out there? Well, of course there is, but interestingly, this is what everyone's writing in about.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about a lot of other stuff today, too.
Any real news out there?
There's so much news, and that's what, when I saw the stream of tweets yesterday morning, which were particularly troublesome, the first thing I thought of is what is going on that he is trying to distract from, because he does sadly, effectively. Often you find that after these string of tweets that then create a distraction, there's something happening that they don't want people to focus on. What it might be is health care. What it might be is concern about how he'd do at the UN, so he wanted to get the conversation in a different direction. Who knows? So it might be something going on with the Russia investigation. Hard to tell.
Well, it always is.
But it's always something.
It's always something.
If you look back, it's always trying to distract from something mm-hmm. else that's happening.
Okay, so I want to go to healthcare. Paul Krugman wrote in the New York Times today. There is a column of his entitled "Complacency Could Kill Healthcare," and he said these days America starts from a baseline of extreme tribalism. 47% or 48% of the electorate will vote for any Republican, no matter how terrible, and against any Democrat, no matter how good. This means, in turn, that small things, journalists acting like mean kids in high school, ganging up on candidates they consider uncool, events that suggest fresh scandal even when there's nothing there, can tip the balance in favor of even the worst candidate imaginable. He asked the question, is something similar about to go down with health care? Republican attempts to destroy Obamacare have repeatedly failed, and for very good reason. Their attacks on the Affordable Care Act were always based on lies, and they never have come up with a decent alternative. All of this should be clear to anyone but now, so you might be tempted to assume that no plan along these lines can possibly pass. But it's precisely because so many people assume that the threat is behind us and have turned their attention elsewhere that health care is once again in danger. The sponsor of the Graham-Cassidy bill, now working its way toward a Senate vote, claim to be offering a moderate approach that preserves the good things about Obamacare. In other words, they're maintaining the GOP norm of lying both about the content of Obamacare mm-hmm. and about what would replace it, according to Paul Krugman. In reality, Graham Cassidy is the opposite of moderate. It contains an exaggerated and almost caricature form all the elements that made previous Republican proposals so cruel and destructive. It would eliminate the individual mandate, undermine, if not effectively, eliminate protection for people with pre-existing conditions, and slash funding for subsidies and Medicaid. There are a few additional twists, but they're all bad, notably a funding formula that would penalize states that are actually successful in reducing the number of uninsured. Teresa, your concern is that you believe the votes could be there.
It's possible. So about a week or so ago, I mentioned that Senator McCain had signed on to this Graham Cassidy bill. This is Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, Bill Cassidy of Louisiana, that say that they have a middle way. And in fact, this is a very dangerous way. So they reported Friday that they have 48-49 votes. They need one more and then the vice president and that's it. Mm-hmm. And so Mitch McConnell says if they have the votes, he will bring it to the floor. Paul Ryan says if it passes the Senate, they will move it through the House. This all has to be done by September 30th because of some complex Senate rules that I won't beleaguer folks with. But this bill is devastating to healthcare coverage. It will shift funding from subsidies to block grants. It will take anybody with pre-existing conditions will no longer be covered. It doesn't require people to get health insurance. It doesn't require employers to provide health insurance. It dramatically undermines the markets. Deeply, it block grants funding, says we're going to move money into Medicaid, but then between 2018 and 2026 gradually decreases, cuts deeply funding for Medicaid. So this will change healthcare as we know it, and if people are at all concerned, just be awake. This could
pass. So the
most
horrible thing about this is the way it snuck in. Mm-hmm. Like when we have breathed a sigh of relief in the resistance and said, okay, we got past that. And no one's paying attention right now. And the only reason people voted against it last time at all was because of the UN outcry from people, from citizens. And that's not happening right now. So, Libby, this is on you. This is your special.
I've already sent it out to all of Capital Women, and I do think that there's going to be quite the outcry, and all the networks are being revved up again around this. So
good.
I don't have to worry about that. Whether or not they'll listen is another story. You know, whether or not John McCain can be gotten to, and it's Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski hold fast against something like this. This is what needs to happen.
The three key people here are Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, and Rand Paul, because this one Rand Paul says he won't vote for, although he's the one that they could switch. So they already have McCain, and so if they can switch Rand Paul, presumably they won't get Murkowski or Collins, because this is as bad or worse than that which they've already rejected. But this is so dangerous. But, this healthcare bill is dangerous.
Right. I mean,
get on the phone, folks.
Politically, it doesn't, it seems like it's Groundhog Day for them. They keep doing the same thing over and over again, trying to get rid of this bill where clearly people want Obamacare to stay. The polls are showing that, and they're heading into the 2018 elections. It just makes politically, it makes no sense.
Well, here I think is the underlying issue, as it has been from the beginning. They first of all want to get rid of anything that President Obama created, but more importantly, they can't settle on a tax bill because they can't figure out how to pay for it. They had been planning on this quote unquote savings, the money that they were taking out of support for healthcare, to go for their tax bill, which by all accounts will benefit the top 1%. And so they're trying to get tax quote unquote reform, tax cuts passed. They can't get the Freedom Caucus on board unless it's paid for, and healthcare is how it gets paid for.
We have to stop calling it tax reform for that very reason.
Right. It's not tax reform.
Blimey.
It's tax cuts for the top 1%. But the price for these tax cuts for the top 1%, you could either pursue going after corporate welfare, which they won't do. So instead of pursuing closing corporate welfare loopholes in the tax code, instead they appear to be taking this last-ditch effort to go after health care and use the quote-unquote savings from that. But these tremendous human costs. The CBO is about to score at Congressional Budget Office. They can't bring it to the Senate floor without a CBO score, but it's been at CBO for over a week now. And so they anticipate that this could be ready to go to the floor sometime in the next few days. So red alert, folks. This is happening. It's real. You saw yesterday Senator Murphy from Connecticut, Kamala Harris, others start saying, folks, they have the votes for this. Let's get busy.
All right. And I want to talk... let's see, we have about 2 minutes. Talk about the demonstrations in St. Louis. Police arrest more than 80 amid violent St. Louis protests. Hundreds of riot police mobilized in downtown St. Louis overnight, arresting more than 80 people and seizing weapons amid reports of property damage and vandalism following another day of peaceful protest over a former police officer's acquittal in the killing of a black man. The arrest late Sunday came after demonstrators ignored orders to disperse. I'm proud to tell you the city of St. Louis is safe and the police owned tonight, Interim Police Chief Lawrence O'Toole said at a news conference early Monday. A judge ruled Friday that Jason Stockley, who left the police department and moved to Houston 3 years ago, was not guilty in the 2011 death of Anthony Lamar Smith. The ruling set off raucous protests throughout the weekend. Another peaceful demonstration was expected Monday.
Well, I think this is what I'm going to say is going to make some people angry, but I think there are provocateurs from the right who come in and are disrupting peaceful protests. And yep, it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. You've got hundreds, thousands of people being peaceful until the evening comes. And then a group hangs out and turns violent. It just doesn't make sense. So I think
that clearly under attack.
Right. I think that there are
just like Berkeley. This is a way to discount the protesters.
Right. Right. I think this is there are provocateurs here who are doing the job of the far right, of people like the Mercers and Steve Bannon and the rest of them who want to take away our First Amendment rights, but also want to return to the days of antebellum slavery in a capitalist sense. Of having 1% welfare and having everybody else suffer.
There's another danger aside from, I think Libby's completely right, and that is that there is continued anger over our police departments who have racist policies. We keep ending up with dead black people and white cops who are acquitted because you just cannot get a cop to be convicted in our courts. And the Obama administration had gotten around that in a very effective way, I think, by throwing it to the Department of Justice. And Sessions, of course, wants nothing to do with that. And he and Trump want to give more military equipment to our police departments and to give them more power to enforce. They think law and order is the way to do it. This is like it could not be a worse recipe for disaster.
I'll give you the last word, Rosemary. We are out of time. My thanks. Rosemary, thank you for joining us. Always nice to have you on.
It's always fun.
We'll talk to you soon. Thank you very much. Teresa Bourgeois, thank you. We'll see you on Wednesday.
I'll be here. Center on Budget Policy Priorities has a good information if you want to know about the Graham Cassidy bill. Sorry, I should have said that.
I love when you give us homework. Excellent. Libby, we'll see you next week.
Yes,
thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.